Hello and welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is, some say he's dead, some say he's alive, but I don't know what to believe anymore.
And I mean, what are you saying? I live on in legend, or am I actually alive? What? I don't even know which character you're talking about.
I'm talking about the hero, William Wallace.
Oh, okay, dude. Some people were saying he was dead. Okay.
Yeah, at some point, some of the people were like, I heard he's might be still alive. Mm-hmm. He's hiding in the wilderness or something.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
That explains why he's the roughest looking 30, 20 something year old that I've seen. With a lot of hard living.
Yeah, and Mel's wig is, I can't tell if it's good or bad.
No, it's not. It didn't seem like it was bad before, but, you know, maybe this movie's not one of those ones that was, like, not supposed to go HD. Because, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, I watched Drag Race with Mary, and I'm used to seeing wigs now, so it's kind of like seeing Mel's wig is like, that doesn't look too good on him. It looks a little silly.
Yep. I don't think we've even said what movie this is.
Well, Mel has a stupid wig in the movie. It looks kind of stupid. It looks dumb on it.
No, but I've seen it actually.
It's bad, right?
Yeah, it's bad.
Okay. But if you want to know more about wigs, I think it's on Wow World Wonder channel. There's a YouTube series with the drag queen Ms. Cracker called Review with a Jew, and she does an episode on wigs that helps you pick out like a good wig and a bad wig when you see it. And stuff.
Interesting.
And like it really is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the movie is Braveheart, which, first off, fuck Mel Gibson. He's a racist, and as far as I know, he has not really done anything to make up for his racism. And like, we don't have to get into it. It's pretty public knowledge.
Yeah.
Of his various instances. But at the same time, like, this is like a big old crowd pleaser of a movie, and even though I find it kind of blah overall, like, it's still like there are moments of like, oh yeah, like, he really understands how to make like a old school like epic movie.
Yeah, it does good in a, well, I mean, this movie's got a lot of genres going on. Epic, yes. 3 hours is a bit much.
Yeah, slasher too.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, yeah, but before that, there was plenty of things that could be like, is this a horror movie? Yes.
It's kind of a religious epic too.
Mm.
There's a, I don't know if you know, there's some.
What were you going to say? Something about Christ?
There's some Jesus imagery in like biblical imagery.
Oh, in this movie. Oh.
Yeah, there might be a little bit. I'm not sure if you know.
I don't know why there would be. I mean, what you know, what religion is Mel Gibson? We'll never know.
I think Mel Gibson, I think he might be a Christian. I'm not sure.
Well, bless his heart.
Yeah. But when was the first time you saw this movie?
I was in high school, probably when this came out. Would have been my freshman year, and let's see, I remember hearing about it, but at the time, like, I thought I was never going to watch super violent movies or horror movies. Like, I thought that would, just the idea of, like, what could happen was scary and gross to me, as a freaking freshman, yeah, make fun of me, but I remember people talking about, like, legs getting chopped off, heads getting caved in, and things like that. And somebody described the old man who's like the leper in this movie, and they described him way grosser than he was. It was like, oh, and things are like falling off of him. I was like, oh no, I can't watch this. But I don't think I think I watched it probably when I was either a senior or older, and I remember liking it at the time. And I just remember like certain incredibly violent scenes, and being 17, you know, the nudity also. But you know, yeah. So
Are you talking about when they lift up their kilt?
Yes. Yeah. I was telling Sarah yesterday. It's like, I have a clear memory of them lifting up their kilts. This was before we had rewatched the movie. I was like, that was a sexual awakening for me. Yeah. No, wait.
You get to see Brendan Gleeson's piece.
The problem with that, like, for on a like attractiveness scale, is these guys are fucking filthy.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, it's I think the first time I saw it, this is only the second time I saw it, and I was in fifth grade, so I would have been 10 or 11, maybe 12. But my dad like taped it off of USA or one of those channels that. That parents watch all the time.
Oh yeah, you got like an edited version. Huh?
Yeah,
that's cool.
And so we taped it off of that, and like he knew I was into history, and so he's like, "You might like this movie," and so I watched it, and I thought it was super cool, and I loved it, and I have not watched it in years, and like after Mel Gibson's like various meltdowns and. Public, you know, people realizing, no, he's not, so he's kind of a shitty person, like, it turns out. Mm. Like, I kind of, really, like, the racist stuff with him, for the thing that made me go, like, I don't want to watch anything with him in it. Like, it's just, like, Lars von Trier being, like, his whole, like, I'm an asshole persona, yeah, whatever, like, he's behind the camera, and he's not in front of the camera usually, and, like, Roman Polanski, you know, that's, he left America, so like he kind of he admitted to guilt, but also, you know, took care of the situation in his own way, sort of. But Mel Gibson's kind of like, I don't feel like he's, it's just like shitty, like a shitty person thing in like a different context of like, oh, he's also kind of charming, which kind of makes me upset when I just movie too, because like, oh, I understand why he's like a huge star, because he's really charming,
right?
And knows how to like to turn on, you know, that movie star mode.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many movie star people that I think are terrible that I know if I met them in person, I'd be like, oh my god. But yeah, what was I going to say? Something about Braveheart. So when did you actually this? Yesterday was the first time you'd watched the actual violent version. How do you feel it compares
to the other
version? Yeah, which would you like prefer if you had to have the non-violent to the violent? Like, do you think the violence is necessary?
On it's been noted. I love action movies, good ones, dumb ones, you know, Italian knockoffs, whatever. So like, I just like action in general. So like, the action in this movie is done really well, but thematically it's like he's supposed to be a man of, he starts out as like a man of peace and talks about like, I don't want to be left alone and just live my life, and then he decides, nah, I just want to just kill a bunch of Englishmen because I can, and then like the violence is so brutal all of a sudden it's like, oh, I thought he's a man of peace, and then like the way it uses it is like you get these great set pieces. But then there's like all the carnage, and it's like, Mel Gibson being like, "Hey, I bet you love seeing all the violence, but it's really that bad because it killed a bunch of people. Do you feel guilty about it? Like it's this weird Catholic guilt trick he's trying to pull on you. That's like, calm the fuck down, get over it."
I feel like Mel Gibson probably thinks, you know what, Jesus would have done the same thing if he was in William Wallace's position. Like, it's not like not a Catholic guilt thing. It's like, obviously, we are the downtrodden underdogs, and I am long-haired, and I could be from Aramea or whatever, you know. Call me Jesus, Braveheart, yeah.
But, I don't know, like, but I also did, you know, I did enjoy seeing the legs getting cut off and, like, the heads getting smashed in. Because, like, it's practical effects, like, and so, like, they had to figure out a way to do all of that.
Yeah.
And make it convincing. And it is convincing.
I mean, that was...
But at the same time, it was like...
Sorry, I was going to say, that was outrageously awesome that they did that in this movie.
Yeah, and so I also kind of like that it's like a war epic, like a mainstream war epic that's also incredibly violent. Mm-hmm. Something that, like, you in general wouldn't see. I feel like if it wasn't Mel Gibson, it couldn't have been this violent. Because if it was someone who wasn't, you know, Mel Gibson in the mid-90s, the studio, Paramount, and Fox, like, co-produced it, mm-hmm. would have been like, tone it down. But because, you know, he's a big movie star, they're like, you know, they gave him some leeway.
Yeah. Did he direct anything before that? No, that was his... Oh, wait, what about this Man Without a Face in 1993? Okay, so... sophomore movie. That's crazy. What was I going to say? I was going to say something about... why do you think he in particular would... Like, I know... based on his work since this movie, why he would be particularly drawn to doing a more violent than you would probably expect movie. Like, in other movies, you know, if I put a Jason mask on one guy and then showed a clip mm-hmm. of the body parts getting smashed and chopped off in this movie, you'd be like, obviously, this is from a horror movie.
Yeah. Like, Gina and Patrick could do a couple episodes on this movie based off the violence.
That's actually true. Yeah, they could.
I doubt they will, but...
No. So, why do you think Mel Gibson would be drawn to violence, was the question.
Wasn't he raised by, like, survivalists in Australia? Well, like, they were, like, American, but they moved to Australia, and they're, like, kind of a little kooky.
That's really funny. I didn't know that about him, if that is true.
It's something like, because like, I believe he is American, but he grew up in Australia, and his dad is allegedly his dad was a Holocaust denier, and among other things.
Yeah, it sounds like he's got some baggage.
Yeah, sounds like it.
I mean, no, I think that's probably the kind of like survivalist experience might have got him, you know, Mad Max originally and stuff like that. So that makes sense.
I haven't seen the original Mad Max movies. Does he have? Because I don't think he has crazy long hair in those movies.
In the first one, it's a little long, but I think it's short comparatively to what you'd probably be thinking. Yeah, in the third movie, he might like start off with long hair, but I don't remember. He's not like Tom Hardy at the beginning of the fourth one, where he's just long beard and shit.
Yeah, but so like, what did I say? Did this movie remind you? Like, do you feel like Peter Jackson saw this and was like, "Oh, I can do this, but with fantasy"? Because part of it, like the huge battle scenes, feel like a precursor to Lord of the Rings.
Like
showing that you can do like
Game of Thrones. So many war scenes in that just feel almost entirely like these do. There was something else I was thinking of that.
I stopped Game of Thrones after two seasons. Like, does it get as violent as this movie does in the battle sequences?
These were so much better because they like kind of focused on those individual moments for violence. Game of Thrones battle sequences are pretty good, but they're not as good as this. I sound like I'm being very complimentary to this movie. I thought it was okay.
it's like aggressively an okay movie.
Yeah. And it might just be that so many things have come after it since then that, like, now at this point it feels kind of cliche, or it could just be evolved. The evolved way I'm seeing Mel Gibson, was he right for this role? And then, like, certain characters that just come on to say a line and go away. And the fact that I think it was Mel Gibson's contract that he has to sleep with at least two women in the movie, things like that.
Yeah. I just want to jump to like my biggest issues with the movie. The biggest thing that I really don't like is it's not historically accurate. But usually I don't care. Like, Malcolm X plays with like the actual history.
Sure.
But it keeps the meat of everything enough. But this plays with history in a way where it's like, it's not so great, where So you know, there's a whole thing of the English or set up the rule of the lords are allowed to have the common women on their marriage night, the wedding night.
Terma nocta or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd never heard that until this movie, but yes.
But there's no actual record of the English doing that to the Scottish at this point in time. So that was just kind of thrown in for, like, I feel like it was thrown in just for, like, to show the attempted rape scene to, like, to justify it on some level.
Sure, yeah. I mean,
Which
you'll feel
feels.
better once that guy dies, so.
Yeah, which is really cheap and shitty. And it's like, there's enough, oppression from the English to justify revenge. Like, there's no need for this attempted rape.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as grimy as, like the Death Wish sequels, but like this is like supposed to be like a classy Hollywood picture, and yet it has this really weird thing of like, let's throw in an attempted rape. You don't actually see it, but it gets pretty fucking close to it.
Well, I think that's Mel Gibson was going to be like, we're going to give them a prestige picture, but I'm gonna have some raping and a lot of cutting, that kind of thing going on.
Yeah. And then other stuff like the princess that he seduces in the movie, at the time she would have been about 3 or 4 years old.
Yes, but how could
Yeah,
she
there's
get
a whole lot.
pregnant if he didn't sleep with her, Spencer?
Yeah, I
History.
guess he did get to invade England
Yes. Wait,
one way,
technically that was
no?
France.
Yeah. But she was married to he did still get to invade. But yeah, and other stuff like and William Wallace wasn't a commoner; he was part of the gentry,
I saw
and like
that.
he came from like a upper class family that owned land.
Yeah, I saw that he probably served in the military.
So like some of the changes are like it's not even a historical movie anymore; it's just like fiction.
Yeah.
It's
Well,
just a
no one wants to see the story of a uprising started by somebody in the upper middle class.
Yeah, I guess. Like, if you wanna, like, if you're gonna do a story about like uprising from like the low, from like the people in the lowest rung, do like a proper movie about the Stonewall Riots. I said proper for a reason because the movie,
Stonewall.
Stonewall apparently, kind of t isn't as it takes away from like the actual real history.
Yeah, I've heard it made some surprisingly large mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't you the it's 3 hours long, and it feels like that. At a certain point, I got bored with even the war scenes. Like, there are, what, three or four of them in this at least. And
Yeah.
the first two, especially that first one, is interesting, and like, it's kind of fun, and then it gets super violent, so you're like, oh, I can't wait to see the second one. The second one also super violent, but then the movie's going on with the politics and things like that going on in the background, and I couldn't help it. I just was like, I've lost interest in this altogether, and William Wallace never made a mistake, and I don't.
He is Scottish Jesus. Like
Yes.
he even traveled the world and learned, like he's a hero of the common people and the poor and
He knew
and like
French,
in
he knew Latin,
the and,
he
He's
knew
religious.
what's that actor's name?
Which Brian
Yes,
Cox?
thank you. That's the one I was looking for. He knew Brian Cox, who was in. I mean, he was just there to be like, hello, boy, you'll come with me. Like, give me more Brian
Yeah,
Cox. Why didn't he
basically.
come in the end?
Yeah.
I mean,
I
I
know,
guess
but
based on how Mel Gibson looks, it was like 40 years, like, yet later, he was probably dead.
something like that. Yeah, it's just overkill of everything. Because even like the beautiful vistas at certain points, like yeah, I know the Scottish mountains look beautiful and misty, it's kind of like, I want more variety with like the way that things looked. It just, that especially got tiresome to me.
The evil king who is so evil, he'll kill his own men, he'll kill his son's lover, but, man, that scene. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the only scene I really remembered was the lover getting thrown out of the window.
Yep.
And as a 11-year-old or whatever, I didn't pick up the context of they were lovers. I just thought, like, he was...
his best friend.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. And, I mean, I think that some of the dumb stuff, I feel like, must be historically accurate. Otherwise, why would they do it? Like, the nobles of Scotland getting together and being like, we should betray him. And, like, one being like, no, we shouldn't. And then when they get to the field, okay, we'll betray him this time. Then the next time it happens, hey, I'm going to betray him. Oh, no. You know, like, how many times does it have to happen before he rides in on a horse and smashes that guy's head?
That's so stupid.
And even then, that's not the last betrayal.
Yeah, like, it's kind of fell into the trap I have with a lot of the historical, like, Western Europe, like, medieval/fantasy things, which is, at a certain point, everyone looks the same, and I can't tell people apart, besides, like, the ones we need to know. Like, Brendan Gleeson, like, he looked like Brendan Gleeson, like, yeah, and he has the presence of Brendan Gleeson, so it's like, yeah, I can pick him out. Mel, obviously, can pick out the Irish guy. The crazy Irish guy, I forgot.
I couldn't pick him out, personally.
He had notable hair, but everyone else was just, like, dirty and Scottish and in the kilt. And it's like, I don't fucking know who that is.
What about Scar guy? The guy with the scar.
Weren't there a couple Scar guys?
No, I'm talking the one who's in the, whose wedding party gets interrupted by the English the first time. That's guy's got a very noticeable scar, and he's been in a bunch of movies. I think he was on Sons of Anarchy, too.
No. I believe you.
You better believe me, jeez. Let's
see. Yeah, and,
Tommy Flanagan is the actor's name.
Oh, isn't he in, like, Lock, Stock, and, Snatch?
No. I don't know who you're
thinking of, then.
No, like, I know him. He was in The Game. He was in Face Off. He was in Gladiator. Says it was in Sin City. I don't remember that.
This was not surprising to learn. Most of the movie was filmed in Ireland.
Mm.
And some was in Scotland.
Mm.
But Ireland apparently has, like, a big industry of, like, if you need fantasy or, like, medieval... British Isle stuff. You go to Ireland to film everything.
You know, I knew it wasn't Ireland because there were no, like, bogs or, you know, the moors, right? Isn't that a Scottish thing? Not a single occurrence of the moors.
It is real mist. Like, there's a whole lot of, like, everything's misty or dusty or foggy.
Yeah, just
the whole time.
Long green valleys, and, you know, don't get me wrong, it's beautiful, but didn't look like the Scotland I know, which is hell.
Yeah. And some of the other biblical stuff I picked up on was, like, when Brendan Gleeson's character throws the sword at the end, and it goes into the ground, and this is crazy. Maybe I'm thinking too deeply into it. Mm. It looks like a cross.
That's weird. Because I thought it was a reference to Seven Samurai. No, I'm joking. You're right. It's a cross. Okay. Like,
and then there's a whole, like, rock throwing thing. Is like, is this like David and Goliath?
Yep.
Metaphor.
Yeah, going on? If only Brendan Gleeson had actually fallen down from that knock to the head, then it would. Yeah. It's like, oh, he's not going to fall down. I guess he's tough.
Yeah. And then there's those, the Latin and Catholicism, obviously.
Yeah, I wonder how religious he was. Like, because everyone seems to be very religious, at least on the Scottish side in this movie. And, I mean, that could just be a reflection of the screenwriter and Mel Gibson. Because I don't know if you looked into the work of this screenwriter.
Randall Wallace.
Randall Wallace.
Maybe Maybe no relation, maybe not. I don't really know.
Probably not. But see, besides Braveheart, he did Pearl Harbor and The Man in the Iron Mask, which he directed.
Interesting.
Then with Mel, he also did We Were Soldiers. And
I've seen that.
Mm-hmm. Heaven is Real. And is apparently working on the sequel to The Passion of the Christ, Resurrection.
Oh, is Mel involved?
Yeah, yeah, Mel's behind it, as far as I know. If it's even a real thing.
Yeah. I thought he was doing the remake of the Sam Peckinpah movie.
Convoy?
Yes. No, the one that people agree is like the good one.
The Dirty Western. Dozen?
No, the similar title.
Sorry, it's called The Wild Bunch.
Wild Bunch, yeah.
The Wild Bunch.
I don't know if that's actually going to get made or not. It's been like a few years since there's really been anything about that.
And now that the rights of the Mad Max series, I think, are freed up again for George Miller to do something, he's probably being like, well, why can't I insert myself in there again? No, wait, that's a different accent. What do you think of his accent in this movie, by the way?
I thought it was cartoony, but a lot of the movie is kind of cartoony.
I feel like it must have been extra difficult for him with the Australian accent on top of it trying to do a Scottish thing, because it seemed like he was trying his darndest. But doing a cartoony thing. It seemed like it was difficult.
It was having like I found another thing I'm gonna know about the imagery. Does it like Mel Gibson is carried on a cross after being beaten.
Yep.
Up to like where he's gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Another. Yeah, it's just like Jesus. You're like, Jesus, I get it. I know what you're trying to go for.
Gibson, I get it.
Yeah. It's just... That and the Vistas got so annoying. It's just like...
Mm-hmm.
Figure out something else. It's just too... It's too, I don't know. But you're saying about the different genres. So it's like historical, epic. It's a war movie. It's a kind of a religious epic.
It's a fantasy movie, too.
Fantasy movie. It's a kind of a slasher horror movie at a certain point, and then it's about like slobs versus snobs. It's like kind of a political thriller,
and it's a boob comedy. Or is it a boob drama? Is there such a thing as a boob drama?
I guess like maybe some Jacques Rivette movies, I don't know.
Yeah. Note to self, research.
I think we're going to talk about Jacques Rivette in our next season.
Ah.
I was trying to at least one or two, and he made like 4-hour long like art movies.
Oh, cool. That
people say are very good.
Mm.
But they're like it's kind of a like purposely a slog to get through, like that's his intention apparently or something.
Interesting.
Anyway, and like adding on to like the violence and stuff, like in the beginning, the first like action sequence where he has like the hidden blade, is watching that is like, oh, I wonder if Assassin's Creed got any ideas from this, because you have the antler to the neck and then he climbs up like a post,
yep,
and throws someone off his leg.
Yeah, William Wallace the original parkour artist, or was it Mowgli from the Jungle Book? Yeah. Like, this is a haunting imagery, too, from practically the beginning, with all those people, like, hanging from the roof, the ceiling, when, you know, his dad and his brother go to that meeting that luckily they showed up late for.
Yeah.
And, there are a couple of gross, so that was gross, and then, like, the decrepit father of Robert the Bruce, right? That's... Yeah, I think he's supposed to have like
lightning powers because he's an emperor.
Yes, he was like, good. You can't understand. We need the nobles behind us. He's got what's the disease that people have on a Hawaiian island have?
Leprosy.
Leprosy. Not all people in Hawaii. I apologize if that's what that sounded like. Yeah, I think he's supposed
I
to
I know what leprosy. You're referring to. Yeah, like their leper colonies because it's so contagious. I guess another gross thing would be when he breaks into the house or cabin of the princess that she's staying at somehow.
He's creeping through her window.
Yeah, because that's during like the slasher section, and like she's looking through the window and no one's there, and so it's definitely being like played as like, oh, he's gonna kill her,
yeah,
and he's gonna show up inside the house, and then like he shows up inside the house kind of like the aliens in the first Alien,
mm-hmm.
like how they kind of like merge with like the technology and like kind of blend in. He kind of blends in with it. And he looks like a predator, but that's a road we're not going to go down.
He's all hairy and things are hanging off, and she thought he was like a pair of curtains or something. Is that...
Yeah, like what?
So that's way pre their obligatory sex scene, I guess.
Yeah, because then like he romances her.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, of course it's going to happen. Like, cause even though, like, I forgot that happened in the movie, and like when he showed up, it's like, oh, well, I guess they're going to have sex, and then 5 minutes later, cut to them having sex.
Yep. That's actually what he says, too. He's like, guess we're going to have sex. No, wait, that's a... What accent was that?
I don't know.
Oh, well.
But, like, before that, she's very horny for Willem Wallace, because she's talking with, like, her handmaiden, like the blonde woman.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if she's ever... Her name's ever said out loud. And they're like, oh, and he fights for the poor people. And, like, they're talking about his, like, they talk about, like, the whole stuff with his wife.
His lost and love.
Like, and there's, like, gushing, like, a couple, like, 13-year-olds talking about, like, reading, like, Tiger Beat or something.
Yep.
And it's like, this is weird. Why is this happening?
Yeah, Princess later wearing Bobby socks and writing in her diary about him. Yeah, I don't... It just... And then when she meets the fantasy that she's no doubt created in her mind, she is not disgusted as you would expect her to be.
Yeah, she's like super horny for him and sends out everyone else, and they're thinking like, are they gonna fuck now? And then they just keep talking, and you get like cut later on. It's like, and like, I think Brendan Gleeson's character, so like they've been in there for a while, so like maybe something happened, but
mm-hmm.
I don't really know.
Yeah.
Did you think this was homophobic in how it treated the gay character, or do you think it was handled?
I think the homophobic thing to do would have been to make him like the bad guy or something like that. I mean, he's on the wrong, quote unquote, wrong side of this war. But I'm not sure if that, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. You know what? It is homophobic because
look, the moment you see him, it's like, oh, he's gay.
Yeah.
And he's definitely coded.
Right. That's the problem. Very... And like, it was like, well, this guy's a loser. He's not going to keep up to meet up to what his father wants. What else can we do? What if he's gay? Oh yeah, he's totally gay. Like the decision to make him seem using homosexuality to show him as a defective character. Yes, I would say it was homophobic.
Like this movie is full of this like hyper masculine bullshit. Like it feels like a movie like maybe like I don't want to. Start and hold on to this conversation. Maybe like incels would love this movie.
Well, yeah, the demographic for this movie, and this includes nowadays probably, or our mid 30s to early 50s, and white, and male.
Yeah, and this is like there's so much stuff about being a man, and like, it's a test of manhood with throwing rocks in the beginning, and then like, when William Wallace is chewing out the nobles, he's like, I thought you were men. The Scots are supposed to be men.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel ashamed to call myself Scottish. It's like, Jesus, just tone down this macho bullshit. It's so silly. Like, I've been saying everything is silly. This movie is, to me, like, this very absurdly silly. When it's, I think it's clearly trying to be serious.
Yeah.
About, like, I mean, inspiring, but it's just so, like, silly, and it's all kind of like a, it thinks it's smart, but it's really stupid.
I mean, it's written from a point of view where William Wallace is God, so that already worked against it. And I like it, it's an interesting artifact because, like, I keep going back to the violence. It's so surprising in a good way that you almost get tricked as a dude. Like, oh, you could get tricked into being like, hell yeah, this movie's great. Did you see all the violence? It's like I could be one of those dudes that watches Saving Private Ryan because lots of people get shot or something. So
yeah, but that's a better movie. It's not perfect, but it's better than this.
It is a better movie. It's got way more characters, or at least and characters like capital I C. Like, I could recognize each of the people in that little band that they create. In this one, it's William Wallace and the bad guys, and not even Brendan Gleeson. I don't. He's just as hit the Barney to his Fred.
Well, more or less. I guess, like, the other major thing is, like, the third act when, after he's betrayed, it just gets very slow. Because, like, the first 45 minutes or so is kind of slow. Because the whole setup to, like, why he wants to fight the English is, gets tiresome. And then get the fun violence with the weird shaming, trying to shame you for liking the violence. And then the third act is, like, he's getting betrayed again and again and again. And it's like, and I honestly did fall asleep a few times in that third act when he, like, goes, like, Jason on the nobles. It's just like, can you just, like, move on? This is so repetitive.
I mean, I just kept thinking about, like, the way capitalism works, and it's like, yeah, this is true. They'll take a little war to get some negotiations done, but eventually the rich will be like, we don't want to change the status quo and, you know, kill the imaginary hero I've got in my brain. But
yeah,
it's kind of, like, it's kind of boring.
Yeah, and like I keep saying it's like a slasher. Like, it literally, there's a part where he, I guess he set up a trap or something, but then at the nobles, like, meeting house, the body of one of the nobles with their throat slashed drops onto a table when they're talking shit about William Wallace. like that's pure, like, Jason Friday 13th, like, shit. That's, like, that is, too absurdly stupid for this movie.
Yeah, like, sure, limbs are getting cut off, you know, and you'll see blood, like, practical blood, which is looks so much better than any CGI shit. But the horror movie things get the horror movie more happens when things get smashed, like specifically him racing, you know, busting through the door into the guy who betrayed him's house and just swinging that mace, or not mace or whatever, like, not a morning star. Anyways, he swings it once and it doesn't shy away. You see practically created head get smashed, and it's like maybe half a second, but it's more than you'd expect to be like, I guess I'm holding on to this. Oh boy.
And the music is pretty good. It's James Horner, so
there was some digital stuff. Did you hear that?
I don't remember,
like, in the beginning. I don't know if it's scattered throughout, but I specifically remember hearing a part that was like, this sounds like keyboard. That's really weird. But besides that, I also didn't dig when they were trying to, they were doing like the regular strings and whatever score. And all of a sudden the bagpipe would join in and try to play along. It was like, my stupid cousin's going to try to play the bagpipe with us. Okay. Just, you know, he doesn't have that many friends. Just let him try.
I wrote down some lines that are particularly ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And one was Robert de Bruce talking to either the nobles or his dad. And he says, "I want to believe like he does." Another religious overtone. And then there was... like Mel talking to all the nobles saying... I'm talking about Robert Bruce saying, like, these men are not for advancing your position. These men want freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's just like, tone it down. But and then again, who, I don't know, maybe, I get the feeling I'm probably the wrong person for this movie.
I mean, that worked. Those parts worked for a lot of people. They may take our lives, but they can never take off freedom. I mean, they were playing that in like Oscar montages for a long time, probably until whenever the latest time Mel Gibson did something that they were like, "Ooh, that's a little too racist for the Oscars."
Well, they invited him back to the Oscars with that World War II movie about peace. That's also incredibly violent.
Is it "We Were Soldiers" or something?
The one with Andrew Garfield.
I have no idea. Spider-Man.
Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
About like a soldier who was a pacifist, mm-hmm. but apparently the movie's hyper-violent.
Right. And of course, his nomination for Dragged Across Concrete.
Yeah. I have no interest in watching that. I don't like... I like Estrog Zoller as a director, but him in interviews is like... he's irritating.
Oh yeah, I don't think I would like him as a person, but his movies are interesting.
Yeah, his whole gimmick now as an interview is being like, he's the type of person who will unironically say like something like, "Oh, I'm owning the libs," just to get a reaction out of people, and being like, "My movies aren't political." It's like, no, they are political. They definitely lean right wing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't get around that.
Right, but that's just normal for him, so it can't be political, right?
Yeah. He just tries to antagonize people in a shitty way. It's just like, stop. You're just embarrassing yourself.
Yeah, as soon as he fucks up, you know, people will throw him the curb. That's what always happens.
Yeah. I still like his movies a lot. No, the first two. I haven't seen the Drag Across Concrete.
Mm-hmm. What were we actually talking about?
I don't remember.
Oh, well.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, like, there's not much to this movie either. Like, it's just like a big old crowd pleaser. It's quote-unquote inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like... there's not much else to it.
Yeah. I'm just, like, I feel like it should be a more interesting story. Like, I think a more interesting story would have been more about the rebellion's origins at that time and, like, the Scottish, and not just William Wallace in particular. But because, like, him... having to tell everybody what to do and every time, and him romancing people or having visions of the romance he once had or making out with Brendan Gleeson is, you know, it's not very interesting.
Not really. But, so, like, this won Best Picture against Apollo 13, the movie I... refuse to watch because, as I've said before, space movies stress me out in a way that is incredibly uncomfortable, and I can't handle space.
Just watch Gravity, Babe. You'll feel fine.
No, the trailer's too much for me.
Mm.
Babe, the George Miller movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in years. Il Postino, The Postman.
I like that movie.
I never heard of that movie until I looked up the Oscars.
Yeah, I'm not... I mean, it's just like almost every Oscar movie, it just disappears.
And Sense and Sensibility, the one with...
Kate Winslet and Emma Thompson, and Snidely Whiplash. No, what's his name? Professor Snape.
Yeah.
That's, I think I would have picked Apollo 13 if I had my particular choice. I do really like that Sense and Sensibility, but Apollo 13 is just a very well-crafted Ron Howard movie.
Yeah. Howard is a real, well, I can't say he's a real craftsman, because there's some real shit movies in his filmography.
Mm.
But overall, like, he's a pretty good craftsman.
Yeah, he's kind of like Ridley Scott, where it's like, I think you have more good than bad going on.
Yeah. He has no real signatures besides, like, you can rely on him to deliver something.
I guess it's time to announce the next filmmaker will be doing Ron Howard.
Yeah, no. But 95, this was the Oscars when Nick Cage finally won one for Leaving Las Vegas. Not finally, whatever.
I was going to say. I mean, I think he probably had been in a bunch of movies since before Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah.
How late after Wild at Heart was that?
This is 5 years later.
Oh, yeah, he's matured.
Yeah. Wild at Heart's so good. I want to watch that movie again.
Yep. I've never seen Leaving Las Vegas.
I've seen parts of it, but I was 13. I found it very boring. Kevin Spacey won for Usual Suspects, and before we started, like I was saying, like I thought Usual Suspects was like a Tarantino knockoff cult movie. I didn't know it was actually a big deal at the time. But it was a big surprise to see like it was like. Like an Oscar movie.
Mm-hmm.
I know the twist because pop culture and people kind of ruined it. So
yeah, I wouldn't say the twist of that movie really makes too much of a difference. I think there are a couple of holes that you can see, but like I mean, yeah, you should just watch it.
Okay. And Emma Thompson won for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Wait, Emma Thompson adapted the screenplay for Sense and Sensibility?
Apparently so.
That's cool.
Yeah. And this is the year of Toy Story. And,
it's why the animation animation award exists, is that right?
That was a couple years later. I think Jimmy Neutron was like one of the first, was like nominated the first one or something.
Oh man, that should have won.
Yeah, but just like those some of the interesting things from that one, and Mina Sorvino won for that Woody Allen movie.
Oh, for Summer of Sam.
What did she do in that movie?
In Summer of Sam,
pretty much nothing.
No, she got not yelled. Much. She got treated like shit by John Leguizamo in that movie.
Yeah. But it's some Woody Allen movie. I've only seen
Mighty Aphrodite, probably.
Are there better movies than Manhattan, or should I just kind of skip Woody Allen if I didn't care for that one?
I mean, there are a couple of Woody Allen movies that I like that just as kind of like I can put it on things. I really don't like admitting I like Woody Allen movies at this point because I don't like Woody Allen at all. But I still really like Midnight in Paris, Scoop, which a lot of people seem to hate, but for some reason entertains the hell out of me. As for things you should watch, maybe you should watch like his more slapsticky stuff that he made originally.
Okay. And I know Shelley Duvall is in Annie Hall.
Right.
I was putting that one off because I didn't like Manhattan. I thought it was kind of pretentious. At the time, I did.
Also, it's about a grown-ass man dating an underage girl, and that's gross.
Yeah, I didn't find it. I found it charming for the first half, and then I was like, oh, wait, they're dating.
Oh, no, he tricks you.
Yeah, like, okay, this isn't that charming.
Like, oh, she's so mature.
Yeah, so I don't know, watch Braveheart if you feel like it. I don't know.
I think you already know whether or not you want to watch Braveheart. I just, like, if you're somebody who's sensitive to violence, then I would probably look for a VHS copy of Spencer Used to Have.
Yeah. Wait till it's on USA or TNT.
Mm-hmm. Or Joe Bob Briggs puts it on. Wait, no, that'll be the one with all the violence. Never mind.
Yeah. It's violent enough for it to be on, like, I was going to say the name of that. What's it called? I'm going to say the name of the a Guy Fieri show.
What the hell? Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives?
Yes.
Why? It's bloody enough to be in that?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Has he ever eaten a burger at a crime scene?
I hope not.
Okay. I'll try to recover.
Okay, so 1995, pretty decent year.
Yeah, a lot of things to choose from, including some of the stuff you mentioned as, like, Oscar contenders. So, Casino wasn't nominated?
I don't remember seeing it.
Wow. There was only five, so that's crazy.
Yeah. But I think we both would agree Tommy Boy is a great comedy, really funny.
Yeah, I find...
Totally holds up.
I've heard some people talking crap about Tommy Boy recently, and I just... What's wrong with you? Don't you know what's funny? Watch Tommy Boy, realize how hilarious it is, and then get over yourself. Mom.
Yeah, my two favorite jokes are... I said this before on the show, when he's going on the tour of the factory and he covers his eyes in the beginning. And he says, Dad, can I gotta cover my eyes? I was like, I never told you to cover your eyes.
Rest in peace, Brian Dennehy.
And Chris Farley.
Tommy, I didn't tell you to do that in the first place.
Yeah. And when David Spade is, like, peeping on, like, the girl in the pool.
Yes.
And he gets caught, and, like, I think his wig falls off or something like that.
The wig thing happens at the end of the movie. When he gets caught, he, like, jumps back into bed, and Tommy's like, say, that's a pretty girl out there. I wonder if she goes out with one of the Yankees. It's so good. Rest in peace, Chris Farley. And David Spade's career.
He has a new show on Comedy Central.
Oh, he does?
That will probably get canceled, because the shows never last very long.
I think that's what happened, like, the last time he did.
He had a talk show, like, 12 years ago, but I don't remember doing anything.
I like David Spade.
I do, too. Just TV-wise, he doesn't have good luck.
Sure. So 95 movies you want to go, or you want me to go first, trade off? What do you want to do?
Trade off.
All right, I'll start. 1995, there's a movie starring Denzel Washington that came out, directed by Carl Franklin, called Devil in a Blue Dress. As I get older, I'm way more of one of those people that'll just toss on any sort of, like, neo-noir and, you know, some regular noir too, although I kind of like I like the newer take on things and creativity they try to put into it.
I thought you were going to say Thrawn, a Denzel movie, not neo-noir.
I mean, you could do that too, and that has nothing to do with being older. It's just, you know, he's the best actor in the world.
Okay.
But
yeah, there's a podcast about it.
So, like, I wish there were, like, four more of these, like, Easy Rollins, like, mysteries, because I think it's a series of books.
It is.
Yeah, and you just get such a kick out of seeing all these actors interacting with Denzel Washington, like, freaking who's Don Cheadle and
On the Pink Smoke podcast, they talked about some episode, like, because they quote her like noir books on occasion. They talked about the Easy Rollins series, and apparently the series is pretty uneven. Some are really good, some are not so good, according to them.
Well, they write their own goddamn book.
One of them has made their own movies.
Oh, well, good for them.
Yeah.
I haven't read any, so I can't judge.
Yeah, former guest Scott Thurow, I think, did the music for Chris's movie. And Tony Stella did the poster for it. It's a really good poster. Oh, it's Tony Stella, so of course it's a good poster.
And what did Melanie do?
I don't think Melanie knows Chris at all.
Well, happy birthday.
Yeah. Anyway, one of mine is Richard III. It's the Richard III play, but adapted to 1930s England with fascism. And it's a really good... I'm not a Shakespeare guy. If you listen, you would know that. But I really like this movie. It's I don't remember too much about it besides just really enjoying it. Except for Robert Downey Jr. being in it, doing a not-so-great accent. And it really sticks out with a cast of English and British actors. And then you have Downey Jr. doing his kind of really over-top accent. It's like, why is he here exactly?
Yeah, it's the movie that prepped him for the Sherlock Holmes movies.
Yeah. And Dominic West from The Wire is in it, which is great. This is pre-The Wire, obviously, and he kind of looked the same.
Yeah,
And hearing him doing his...
What? His accent?
Hearing him doing... His accent always starts off, because I'm so used to McNulty.
Yeah, pre-Jigsaw.
Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
I recommend it.
Let's see. I'm going to have to talk about... I would talk about Safe, but I assume anyone who's listened to this podcast knows about the Todd Haynes movie. And if it's on your watch list, just watch it. Go watch it right now. It's perfect. It's all about... Well, anyways, go watch it.
Yeah, it's, I think, Marcus Penn's favorite movie, or one of his favorite movies.
It's great. I really like the movie Get Shorty. It's kind of weird that this came out and when The Usual Suspects also came out. Like, Gangsters was on somebody's mind. This is one of the movies that you can watch and be like, oh, that's why John Travolta was a star. Because he, as like you were saying about Mel Gibson, like, he's just charming as all hell in this movie. And there were a couple of movies where he could play cool as like this. And this movie's funny. It's got Delroy Lindo in it, so that should be on the must-see list anyways. It's kind of got a twisty plot that is really, like, it doesn't matter if you know how it ends or not. It's really entertaining. James Gandolfini is in it? Man, I didn't... Okay, I need to rewatch this right now. See you later, Spencer.
All right. Okay. I just got two more. One is Tank Girl, which I know some people really hate, some people really love. I'm in the love category. It's stupid. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's kind of... Like, you can tell, like, they didn't have much to work with. But it's just so much fun and so stupid and goofy that I really do enjoy it. And Ice-T is a kangaroo man.
Yeah.
And there's an interview where someone tried to zing him with, like, hey, I heard you were in Tank Girl, and that movie failed. And he's like, so what? I got paid $800,000 for it.
Fuck you. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, so if you want to see, like, Ice-T as a kangaroo man, James Hong has one scene because, you know, he's busy appearing in, like, 90 other movies.
Yeah.
Because he's always working.
We just saw him in Chinatown the other day.
No.
I don't mean we went to Chinatown. I mean we watched the movie Chinatown.
Yeah. I should have watched that again. I found it underwhelming the first time.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I really, really liked it. Like, this time I really paid attention to cinematography. It's kind of mind-blowing.
I like the... And I like the other Polanski movies I've seen more.
Mm-hmm.
Like Cul-de-Sac mm-hmm. and Rosemary's Baby. We're not here to talk about that. And also, Laurie Petty is a star of Tank Girl, and I genuinely love her performance in Tank Girl. Like, she is such a fun character.
Yep, she's great. I mean, I haven't seen Tank Girl, but she's great.
Yeah, I wish she had a better career. It's kind of shitty that it never quite happened. Like, she was never a bigger star. And she is in Orange is the New Black, and when she showed up, like, oh, fuck yeah, she's here. And it's like, oh, she's barely in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't...
I'm saying I want more Laura Petty. She's great.
I agree. I don't really have another one. I guess if I had to be picking something from my Letterboxd list, it would be the 327-minute miniseries Pride and Prejudice, which is with Colin Firth and Jennifer Hill. It's legitimately great and entertaining. Like, I don't know. You probably think, if you're one of those people like, I'm not going to watch a Jane Austen thing, you should probably give it a try anyways, because... I don't know. I don't usually go in for the adaptations they do for stuff, but this, for some reason, is really good.
Hmm.
I mean,
okay,
it's not a mystery why it is. It just is.
Yeah. My last one is Gamera, Guardian of the Universe. This was recommended to me by the first guest we ever had, Kevin, from the Transformers Cybertronological podcast, mm-hmm. Who passed away in, wait, has it been a year already?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus, I didn't realize. Yeah, passed away a year ago or so. But, because he's was a huge fan of the kaiju movies and was, like, had encyclopedic knowledge of kaiju movies. And if you listen to our Gojira episode, like, he, like, there's, like, a 20-minute, like, history lesson on, like, kaiju movies in Japan post-World War II.
Yeah.
It's very entertaining. Very entertaining. And he mentioned he loved the movie Gamera, Guardian of the Universe, and it made him cry. When I remember him saying that, but it didn't make me cry, but it's just a really great, fun kaiju movie.
Mm.
And I highly recommend it. You have to buy a DVD. It's a thing, but either way, like, it definitely is worth the money.
Yeah, there's a huge box set of them coming up sometime this year. All the Gamera movies.
I'm definitely interested. I like Gamera. Controversial, I guess. I like Gamera more than Gojira, Godzilla, and I like King Ghidorah more than the most of all the monsters.
You make me sick.
I know. Rodan sucks. He's boring.
I'm not an art critic.
Although I'm basing that off of the Godzilla game on the GameCube, because Rodan was the shittiest character on that. Anyway, so the next episode, this one came late, but whatever, if we got to it eventually. Next episode, Red Hook Summer. Paired with Amor, the I'm saying Louis Malle, not Louis Malle. What if I'm trying to think of
Hanukkah.
Michael Hanukkah. Yeah, so that's coming up, and this month the special episode will be on Charles Burnett, the movie to Sleep with Anger.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you haven't seen that movie, it should be necessary viewing.
Yeah, watch it. Watch it before you listen to the episode.
Can you even spoil that movie, you think?
No, it's not spoilers I'm worried about. I just mean, like, it's so good, you should just watch it. Sight unseen.
Yeah, and it's, should be more famous, and thankfully there's a Criterion, a Blu-ray, DVD of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I, watching it, I think both of us had a reaction of, like, why didn't we see this movie before?
Yeah.
It's kind of fucking amazing.
I was thinking about it for more than a week afterwards. Like, it's kind of astonishingly, like, must-see.
it's pretty much proof Danny Glover is way underrated.
Yeah.
And he should be a lean man more often. Just, you know, whatever.
He should have
been. Stuff happens how it happens.
At this point.
I mean, he produced Timbuktu, so he's doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, check out, whatever.
Waiting for Guffman.
Maybe this month I'll drop the secret episode that we recorded like a month ago.
All right, Predator 2. I'll
definitely edit that to go. I hope you aren't joking. Predator 2 is great. But, yeah, that's it. See you guys for Retrex Summer, which is on Tubi for free currently, if you want to watch it.
Yeah, you should watch it. It connects all the universes.
We unveiled the Spike Lee. Oh yeah, is Braveheart like clockers at all? I don't know.
Oh, I didn't even really think about that. Well, not it's about really. It's about warring factions, and Jesus. There is a lot of Jesus.
Clockers is one of the least religious Spike Lee movies.
That's true.
And usually there's some Christianity popping up somewhere. Clockers is all like drugs and the cops.
Oh, well, I'm thinking of I was thinking of Red Hook Summer because you said that earlier. Sorry.
Red Hook Summer. That's a real Christian movie.
Yeah. Clockers is about a boy and his video game.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not worth Clockers getting into.
No, Clockers is a better movie
than Braveheart.
Yeah, it's much better.
Yes, I think it is better. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's it. See you guys next time.
Bye. All right, stopping recording.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell, and thank you for listening.